Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. I have to say, I'm looking for Brother Ashra to once again inspire and expand our insight in relationship to the subject matter we're talking about. So I'm really motivated, if nothing else.
You know, it's always good to, because usually when these holidays roll around, some of the bigger celebrations here that we have been kind of indoctrinated to follow since we've been exposed to Europeans roll around, we usually have Brother Kwesi and some of the other historians come on and talk about the origin of some of these holidays and see how there have been a corruption of African spirituality. I don't think a lot of our people realize what has happened. They see a lot of things on the surface, but I don't think we have the critical, in fact, I know we don't have the critical discussion, the critical discussion about these things in our houses of worship, be it temples, churches, or even mosques, because even though somebody's in a mosque and they might not celebrate these type of holidays, their family does. We really need to have a critical discussion of the origin of these things and find out so we can, just like we say at the mantra of our program, it's time for our people to develop a new paradigm, to go back to the things that made our people once great, and to break that, to take a phrase from your brother and colleague, Richard, Dr. Fox, to break that addiction to white that we have. I think tonight will kind of lend in that discussion. I want to welcome back to our program to talk about African spiritual science in the Christmas holiday. Baba Ashra Kwesi is with us. Baba Kwesi, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Brother Elliot Booker. It's honored to be on your show again, and also Hotep, peace to Brother Richard as well.
Hotep now.
Oh, I'm glad to have you back. I know that you're leaving soon to go on a tour in Ethiopia, a historical tour. Before we get started with our discussion this evening, when are you leaving, Crazy?
We're actually leaving on the 27th. So, you know, we're right in the middle of trying to, you know, get the group out. And this is our annual winter tour that we do annually every winter. And as you know, our Kemet tour is in the summer. So we do the winter and the summer.
Okay.
And returning back to the Fallopian tube, where it all began.
You know, and that's one of the reasons we wanted to bring you on, at least before you left, to talk about this holiday that we celebrate here among Europeans. And I mean, it's a holiday that's celebrated worldwide, wherever Europeans have been. And let's look at this from a historical perspective, Baba Kwesi, and you're one of the best people to have on to talk about this. You find a lot of our people that says, well, the holiday, the Christmas holiday celebration is European. We don't need to be involved in that. And they kind of leave it like that on the surface. They really don't go down, dig down deep to really discuss this. Because certainly the origin of these things, and in fact, the origin of a lot of the symbols are European. And we'll talk about those in the discussion this evening, because they're very important. But before we talk about some of the origin of the symbols that is popularly seen in relation to this holiday, let's talk about the relation of this holiday to African spiritual science, because I don't think a lot of our people understand that connection. Baba Kwesi, let's start that discussion there, and you take it from that point.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, it's a very serious time at this time. You got to excuse me, it's right at dinner time. I hope all the blood didn't go down to my stomach. My wife fixing those good vegan meals, you know, keeping me alive. Yes, sir. Yeah, this is a time that, unfortunately, many of our people don't want to hear anything about the fact that what we see celebrated in the European Western version of Christianity, and especially this holiday, called Christmas that to say that this is a corruption of ancient African spirituality that goes back countless thousands of years. And then people were saying, oh, you don't want to celebrate Christmas. You're trying to make up these things. But we have to go back to our ancestors and go back to the temples and tombs that I've visited for many years now, going on 37 years, and peace be upon him, my teacher named Dr. Yosef Inyakin, and we affectionately know as Dr. Ben, 14 years apprenticeship under him. And I always like to tell the story to let people know that I did not always know this as well. So equally, hearing him at Long Beach State back in the early 70s, and Dr. Ben gave a very powerful presentation, even though in the Black Power movement at that time, but a lot of our divinity and a lot of our spiritual black deity was not intact, or black God consciousness was not intact in many cases. A lot of times we end up in the church and comrades, we would have a white Jesus over them, and I knew something was wrong with that picture. But Dr. Ben put the history and the black divinity as well as the black deity together for the first time I heard in 1973. And I asked Dr. Ben, can you prove this? He said, I can take you back and show you. And that's the first time someone told me that they can show me. He said, but above all, we need young people like you to go back and do the field research. So that started my journey, or at least my dream at that time, to return back to Africa, making that journey in 1981, and never knowing that I would spend the rest of my life returning back to the Nile Valley. And that's in the land of Kemet, that's referred to as Egypt today, and well as Sudan, that our ancestors referred to as Kush, all the way down to the Kui land, which is known as the Congo and the Uganda, and those areas that our ancestors said they came from. So we talk about the African spiritual science in the Christmas holiday. This is documented on temples and tombs up and down the Nile that I have witnessed, that our ancestors carved 2,000 and 3,000 and 4,000 years ago. Right now here in Texas, and as I always say, it's sad that I have to, I live in a black neighborhood, and I'm driving through the neighborhood, and it's sad to see all these plastic white babies all in black folks' yards, and a black, white family, not a black family, but a white family, a white mother, a white father, and this little white baby is looked at as the holy child. And as I tell people, and some people who may be receptive to the information, most people who have these white plastic babies in the yard are unreceptive to the fact that long before there was a white baby recognized as a holy child, it goes back to Africa. The first recording of a black holy child goes back to Kemet, is documented, referred to as Heru, and the holy mother is Aset, who the Greeks referred to as Isis. Here we see the earliest recording of the Madonna and Child. In fact, long before the Europeans had the concept of a Madonna and Child and Holy Child, they actually worshipped a black baby and worshipped a black mother. And that was first by the Greeks, who came in first with Thales and Pythagoras and many other Greeks who came to Egypt to study. And then after that, the invasion of Alexander II that our children are taught to call the Great. Nothing great about him coming in plundering as he did, where he commissioned Aristotle's to plunder temples and tombs up and down the Nile. But this is how they got their first initiation into the mother and child from the goddess Aset and also the holy child Heru. And then as we see the Romans who came in equally, who usurped the throne from the Greeks, from the Ptolemies, they equally also started to worship the Madonna and child. In fact, even to this very day, they still have temples in Rome, okay, dedicated to Aset, who they referred to as Isis, that came up out of Africa, up out of Kemet. And they carried her throughout their empire, known as the Herculaneum worship of the goddess Aset, this Madonna and child. And we still see her there today, but she's referred to as the Black Madonna. And people don't ask, why is she the Black Madonna? Well, prior to the Western world becoming into the Christendom, this was Aset, who they actually worship. But when the Roman Byzantine Christians are now on the scene now, with the fall of the Roman Empire, they are now taking these ideas that came up out of Egypt, first taken by the Greeks and then the Romans, and they are now incorporating this in the beginning of the start of the Western version of Christianity. So the Black Madonna that we see is still black, but it was originally a Set, who, as I said, the Romans worship, but now she becomes Mary. And this is what we get in the Western Christian religion. We have to go back to Kemet and see why did our ancestors have this idea of the Madonna and child in the first place. our ancestors saw that during the time of the before the winter solstice, or as the sun goes into the winter solstice, during the time of Virgo, or during the time of anyone who's a Virgo, or they call the zodiac sign of Virgo, is referred to as the Virgin. That's the time of September. That's the time that the sun is now going down towards the winter solstice, where we are right now. Okay, the winter solstice was December the 21st. Our ancestors were the first observers. We could say that they are the first astrophysicists who observed these cosmological events, that they developed a astrotheology out of it. To keep a spiritual story alive, they saw that as the sun continued down into the winter solstice, precisely at December the 25th, our ancestors saw that was the birth of the sun that they referred to as Ra. How they could tell is that the brightest star in the heavens rises, and that star they referred to as Stabo Septa, who the Romans referred to as Ceres. When that star rose, a constellation of Orion rises in the east. I go out in my backyard and observe this same exact event. Now, why did they deify this cosmological event? They deified this cosmological event because they saw that that was the birth and the spiritual story taken from the cosmos now. In the spiritual story, they said Haru would be born at December the 25th. He was personified as the sun. The virgin, the mother, is Virgo, where the sun is born out of the virgin Virgo. So here our ancestors took cosmology for the spiritual story of Aset to live for eternity, the Holy Mother, and the Holy Child, who was born of the Immaculate Conception, the world's first Immaculate Conception that we revealed to our groups in the world's first holy city called Abtu, that the Arabs refer to as Abydos. There's a temple there built by Seti I where it shows where Set is carved in stone where she is impregnated. The earliest recording of the Immaculate Conception, she was once on a donkey, but when the Byzantine Romans came through Egypt, they were chiseling out a lot of these ideas that they were plagiarizing because it was so obvious. So here you can see part of the donkey that is still there, but we can still see her there pregnant with the Holy Child, Haru. These were the stories that our ancestors told, and to keep them alive, it was through cosmology. Now, who is the father? The father is Asar. It's the constellation of Orion. When it rose, it represented Asar. Now, there were three stars in Orion's belt, and the Kemetic name they're referred to as Al-Natek, Al-Alam, and Manteca. The three stars in Orion's belt, when the star system Ceres becomes perpendicular to the sun at December the 25th, those three stars point exactly to that star. It tells them that the sun is going to come back. Our ancestors personified that as Haru. Now, when we go into the Western version of Christianity as we got it today, and we come into the Yuletide, that literally means the birth of the sun, what we see are these European images that, unfortunately, many of our people have gotten caught into white idolatry. We've been brainwashed to think that this is a story that actually happened, as it was an actual story. When we look at the Yuletide, we're looking at cosmology. The question got to be asked, why does Mary always got the sun behind her head? Because that's the sun and the constellation of Virgo. Why do we see this European image of the European Jesus with the sun behind his head at December the 25th? And you look at the Yuletide, there's a line going straight up to that star saying, so here we see this is a cosmological event where they took and anthropomorphized or used their own European images to represent the cosmos. So the three magi, when we look at the three magi, there are two of them, they're a perfect, you always see two of them are a perfect alignment with each other, and one of them are slightly out of alignment. The question we've got to ask, why is that? When we look at the three stars in Orion's belt, there are two of them perfect in alignment and one slightly out of alignment, and those three stars point directly to that star in the east, and that is the star Sibyl Septa, or Ceres. That is the star in the east that our ancestors, and I show our groups every year, you know, when it rises, it says the Haru is going to be born of this holy birth at December the 25th. He's personified as the sun. This is a story that our ancestors told, and many of the stories in temples, and even though Aristotle's robbed the temples and plundered the temples and took many of the papyruses out, and it was the Ptolemies who in fact built the Alexandria Library for Alexander, who wanted this knowledge of Kemet to be housed in one place. This is how the Europeans started to get these ancient stories of ancient African, Kemetic Africans at the Nile Valley. These stories that our ancestors told. Now, when we look at the story, and let's go to another, the Temple of Aset. The very temple that she has is in the most southern part of Egypt. It's called the Temple of Isis today. And I take our group into the Mimizi House. The Mimizi House is the birth house. And there we can see a line, okay, right through the temple to show that this temple was under the sand. They only dug it out to make tourist dollars, but not to tell the truth. But here we see she had to hide in the papyrus swamps because there was an evil brother out to kill the holy child, Heru, because he feared he would grow up and overtake his throne, which he usurped from his father, Heru's father, Asar. Now, here we get the story that Jesus had to hide from Herod. We also get the story that Moses had to hide in the bulrushes. This is a set in the papyrus swamps. So without question, this is why the Western Church feared Egypt, and this is the reason why Theodosius and Justinian in the 4th and 6th century A.D. shut the temples down in Egypt. They were copying these ideas and incorporating into Western version of Christianity. This formulation came together at various ecumenical conferences, and one of the first ecumenical conferences was the Conference of Ephesus. Here at the Conference of Ephesus, Conference of Ephesus, one of those ecumenical conferences in 431 A.D., where they de-Africanized Aset and making her into Mary. But it was the Conference of Nicene, their first conference in 325 A.D., started the formulation of the Western version of Christianity based off of the spiritual story of Heru born of a holy birth from his mother Aset. Now, let's look at clearly at the story where the call from heaven is a spiritual netter. People may not be familiar with a lot of the Kemetic netters. A netter would be equivalent to us saying angel today. Okay, and the Kemetic word is referred to as netter. Here, Tehuti is the one that gave the call from heaven that Aset was going to have a holy child. And the call came to Asar first to say that his wife was going to have a holy child born of this virgin birth. Now, when we go to the story and we see the story that's told in the Gospels and we see the story that is told in Matthew's, that here we see that Mary's going to have this holy birth and is an angel of the Lord. And the angel of the Lord appears in the back room to Mary, and she's shocked. Who are you? Well, I'm Gabriel, angel of the Lord, to let you know that you're going to have a holy child. Gabriel is actually Tehuti. That was literally plagiarized from the spiritual concepts when the Greeks were in Alexander studying these papyruses, that the Kemetic Africans of the Nile Valley, out of their spiritual consciousness, who developed this story thousands of years ago, and incorporate it now into the Western version of Christianity at these ecumenical conferences. So now when we look at Gabriel, the angel of the Lord, the question got to be, what is the earliest story that we ever heard of a spiritual one? Or, as I said, the netter, they would be equivalent to angel. That would go back to Tehuti. One account after the other, and what's so interesting, considering that we are in the month of December and the holy birth, it's not only on one temple, it's on many temples. And this story was passed down. For instance, when we go in the back of the temple of Ipet-Rissut, okay, this is another temple referred to today as Luxor, and the Byzantine Romans built a basilica back there. And even though they were calling the temples names like pagans and heathen, they were using the temples, okay, because many of the ideas that they were literally plagiarizing were already on the temple, but they were literally using the temple for a church. But here, during the time of the 18th dynasty, here is a king named Neb-Maat-Ra Amenhotep III. And here is the story of a virgin birth. Here he's born of a virgin birth from his mother, Matanuia. And his spiritual father, okay, being Amen, but his biological father being Thutmose IV. What the Byzantine Romans did was 2,000 years ago, they plastered over Amenhotep III, this virgin birth, okay, and then painted the Byzantine Roman white images on it. Now the plaster is falling off, and I show our groups, and now you can see the Amenhotep III still under there that was put there 3,000 years ago during the 18th dynasty. And we go to another area. I'm saying these areas to show that this was a consistent story that the Europeans already saw and read from the papyruses and saw on the temples, and where the idea came from, that it was passed down through the millennia, even in ancient Kemet. Here we have a queen named Hatshepsut. She built a great, beautiful temple in what is known as the West Bank, called Zetzret Zetzru, meaning the most select and holy of places. And Europeans don't go to this particular area, and the reason why they don't go there because they don't the guys don't want them to have a conflict with some of these stories that I'm talking about because of their own Christian religious beliefs. But here we see Makari Hatshepsut is born of a holy birth and immaculate conception from her mother Atmos. It's through this holy birth that was first passed down from Asar, Aset, and Heru. It was even passed down through ancient Kemet. And here she was born of a holy birth, okay, from her mother, Atmos. And you see her there in the Madonna and Child known as the birthing colonnade. So the point is that this celebration that we're out here celebrating, how many of us know, is this taught in the European Western academia? Is it taught in the white seminary schools? No, because if it was taught in the white seminary schools and have a comparative analysis with religions, then one would question, the brain would think and say, well, this is the oldest story, okay? And this is obvious copied from these ancient stories of ancient Kemet and incorporated into the Western world and finally formulated in their ecumenical conferences that we see today. So when we see the African spiritual science in Christmas holiday, we can see that even the name Christmas, let's look at Christmas. There I show brothers and sisters on the temple, there the ancient symbol for the ka are two arms up. That means the ka, that means spirit. The early Gnostics, okay, now these Gnostics, they were African Christians who were trying to keep the spiritual story that the Romans, the Byzantine Romans, were corrupting and making this more of an antichrist. An antichrist means an anti-divine spirit, okay? That what the Gnostics were saying, that all of us are a ka. We all have a spirit, that we all are translated today are a Christ, not a man, but a spiritual development. But the Romans feared that because they understood if people rose up their ka, their spirit, they would fight against tyranny and oppression. That means Malcolm X. To translate it today for us to understand it, is a Christ, not a Christ as a European, but a spiritual development, okay? Martin Luther King would be a Christ. He fought against tyranny and oppression. This is what the Romans feared from the Gnostics, that by having them around who really understood what this was all about, and they were corrupting the story and creating, in fact, a Serapis Jesus. A Serapis Jesus is a character that they actually made at their conferences, that even before the Byzantine Romans, it was the Ptolemies who first created this Serapis character because in ancient Kemet, they would not worship the Ptolemies on the throne. So they took Asar, that I talked about a minute ago, who's Heru's father, and literally made, not only did they change Asar from black to white, but even change his name from Asar to Serapis. And all the stories that we know about salvation, resurrection, the foundation of Western version of Christianity were all based off of the spiritual stories that were told on papyruses. Vellum didn't exist yet. Codex didn't exist yet. Parchment didn't exist yet. That early writing was on papyruses and carved on the books in stone. And fortunately, it's still there for us to see. But that idea of the ka was the spirit. And mes meant birth. So this time they saw was a spiritual birth. First, they observed it through the birth of the sun. This is a new beginning, a new spiritual. This is a new spiritual time for us because it's the time of the birth of the sun, so it became Kames. And this is where the Byzantine Romans took Kames and called it Christmas. Anyone can go to Bible Dictionary and see the word and look under the word Christmas, and they'll tell you first started by Constantine. Constantine being the one who had the army to enforce the Western version of Christianity in the first place. But they'll tell you that the word Christmas is formed of two words, okay, Christ and Mass. All right, that Christ and Mass was originally Ka-Mes, okay, that is the spiritual birth that's still carved on the ancient temples of ancient Kemet. And it's only until we start to go back and look at this, that's why when we start to talk about Kemet, the Western churches always had a fear of talking about ancient Egypt. When the Theodosius and Justinian and the European Byzantine Roman Christians, when they finally formulated their version, the Western version of Christianity, they burned that library down. Of course, taking what they thought they could use, housed it still now in the Vatican cellar. Many of these papyruses that were there are still there. And a lot of the information has been corrupted down through the millennia. But here we see the idea of the it's hard for us to even think that the first worship of a holy child was a black baby. That is hard for us to even think. The idea of black divinity that I've witnessed on the temples and tombs and Kemet for 37 years of my life now, there we can see where Europeans frantically went through and did everything trying to erase the black divinity from the temples because they were copying these concepts. And this is where we see not only the copying these ideas, but now the demonizing of black divinity so we could not see our own spirituality. We could not see our own, not only our own spirituality, but even our own black deity or seeing God in our own image. And this is what started the whole demonizing of everything black.
You know,
and, but only until we go back to Kemet can we see where these ideas literally came from. And that's been the biggest fear is the study of ancient Kemet. After all, the Greeks came in. They were there for 300 years. The Ptolemies ruled the throne of Kemet for 300 years, and the Romans eagerly came in after them. And then here come the Byzantines. So collectively with all of them, they were there for 1,000 years to study ancient African knowledge that our ancestors documented for thousands of years. So it's sad to be in this season and to flash back on all these reliefs and monuments and see our people out here frolicking around and spinning up their credit cards and maxing them out and homicides, suicide, burglaries, and murder, all indoctrinated into frantically to help pick up the gross national product and get that gift by any means and having no idea that long before there was a worship of a white baby, it was the, our ancestors who saw that Heru personified all of our black babies. He personified, he was the Sa-Ra, as it was referred in ancient Kemet, that means the son of God. This is where the idea of son of God came from. He is the Sa-Ra, the son of God. He's born at December the 25th. In fact, when the priests went different places around the world, they carried these stories with them. And when we look at Krishna and we see the Madonna and child, that came up out of Kemet. It's the same story. Here we see that Krishna is born from his mother, Javiti, of a holy child. Where's the prototype of this story? Where's the beginning? As I referred to the Happy Valley, as our ancestors called it now, I referred to it as the Fallopian tube because it gave birth not only to humanity, but it gave birth to spirituality that is now religion today. It gave birth to civilization that is now looked at as Western civilization, as the origin of civilization, when in fact that the Greeks got introduced. And many of the Greeks came in and studied right there in Kemet where civilization began. And that's why the Happy Valley is the Fallopian Tube. We go to all the way to Buddha, okay? We see Buddha, the same Madonna and child. He's born of a virgin birth in Immaculate Conception. This is all ancient African Kemetic spiritual science. This came up out of black people's spirituality. That's why I always like to say we've got to open up an African ancestral genetic memory bank, as I like to quote Dr. Richard King, peace be upon him, in his book, The African Origin of Biological Psychiatry. There's a genetic memory bank in us, and that's the biggest fear of the Europeans, is us unlocking that genetic memory bank to start to take the longest journey, and that's the longest journey in our life, and that's to return back into ourselves. And that's the longest journey that we can take. And again, so how do we transmit this in the time of, in many cases, many of us are in spiritual enslavement. You've got to be in spiritual enslavement. As one man a couple years ago, he had his child in the yard down here in Texas. And he had a little black baby in his arm. And I had to go up in the yard to see what he was doing because he had the white plastic family baby and a white baby down there. And I said, what are you doing? I'm teaching my son. This is the son of God. Okay. And I said, no, your son is the son of God. He said, no, this is the son of God. I'm teaching the son of God. So this is what is known as spiritual enslavement, when the enemy becomes the deity and the spiritual subconscious of our mind. So he's teaching his own black baby, his own beautiful African child, that this plastic thing that he had in the closet all year round is the Son of God. So this is why, you know, we're in the worst form of enslavement now, Brother Booker, and that's called spiritual enslavement. Because spiritual enslavement, we don't see our divinity. So we see our children out here, and we don't see them as a divine representation. We don't see them. We don't tell them that they are the Son of God. That was looked at as heresy. Many of our people who are Christians, some of us don't even dare call our child the Son of God, because the reflection that they see as the Son of God is this European image that was created by Europeans. Now, were there those out there fighting the Romans? Yes. Okay, those were the Gnostic Christians, okay? And that's when one became a caress, as the Gnostics called them, because they were fighting against tyranny and oppression. They rose up their spirit, knowing they were going to die. Like who? Like Cyprian, one of the early Christian fathers. Why did the Byzantine Romans cut off his head? Because he was studying a Gnostic version of Christianity that was about spirituality, not about the deification of a character that they had created. So they feared him in teaching the Gnostic Christ, that the people would rise up their spirit and fight against tyranny and oppression. And we understood the real meaning of the Christ, and we see our people being shot down in the street on television, then we would not fear. We would rise up our spirit and fight against tyranny and oppression. That's what was referred to as the ka, the spirit, okay, as the Gnostics called a caress, who the Romans corrupted it in a term that they call Christ, in the terms of creating an image, okay, for the indoctrination, for our people to look at that and saying that that is the Christ, and that's what we've been ever since.
Brother Crazy, because I wanted to talk about some of the symbols that have been put into this holiday, but before we get to that, and I want to pass the mic to Brother Richard, I just wanted to reiterate for the listening audience that, because when you talk about these things, and I can't ever talk about it from the perspective that you just mentioned it, but when I talk about it from the perspective that I understand to people that I, you know, become familiar with, the first thing they do is jump to the defense, because you just mentioned about some of the spiritual stories that's in the Bible, the virgin birth, the three wise men, being led there by the star, the angel speaking to what is said Mary in the scriptures. When you talk to people about these spiritual stories, the first thing they do is jump to the defense of the Bible. But I don't think what they realize, and that's where critical thinking comes in, the information that you're talking about was carved in stone. This was before the use of paper. From what you're saying, our foreparents, our ancestors developed the use of paper, writing on paper, which was the papyrus. This is where the scrolls and all came from. So when you're talking about the things carved in stone, this was before the use of paper. So you can't compare things in the Bible to information you're talking about to say, well, the Bible said this. If you're talking about something that is written in stone, it predates the use of paper by maybe thousands of years.
You're absolutely right, Brother Booker. And that's a lot of times it's hard for our people to understand that. In fact, even the name papyrus, even the name paper came from papyrus.
Okay.
And when the Europeans were starting to write they wrote in what is called parchment, which is animal skin, and also vellum and codex. That became that's hundreds of years later. But the earliest writing was papyrus. You spoke of Bibles. Well, first of all, we have to look at, where were the first Bibles written at? Were they written in Europe? No. Were they written in Asia? No. They were written in Alexandria, Egypt. Now, the question we got to ask, why are these Bibles written in Alexandria, Egypt? What is the European's oldest Bible? That's referred to as the Septuagint version of the Bible, written around 250 to 100 BC. It was Ptolemy Philadelphus, okay, who wanted a Greek version of the Bible, because up until that time it was only the Torah that existed. And the Torah is where? In Alexandria, Egypt. How are these Bibles being developed? They're developed because of the papyruses that were all throughout those temples of Egypt. Alexandria was the intellectual world at that time, okay? So when we see that early Christian fathers, okay, where are they studying at? They're studying in Egypt. This was the place that everybody came. When they built that library and plundered the temples, all the knowledge was right there. So when we look at the Koine version of the Bible around 52 to 100 A.D., this is the early New Testament version of the Bible, okay? Again, based off of the Septuagint, and it's in Greek. The question that we got to ask, why are these Bibles always written in Greek? Because it was the Greeks who studied the ancient papyrus of Egypt to write the Bible. Now, when we think of the earliest spiritual writing, that's coming up out of black people's consciousness, yes. Okay, this is not alien to us.
Mm-hmm.
We gravitate naturally to Christianity because many of the spiritual ideas came out of African spiritual consciousness in the first place, but corrupted, plagiarized, distorted, and formulated into European images. When we look at the early Bibles of North Africa, known as the Latin Version Bible, okay, now it was the new, when we look at the European Latin, see, these are the things that we need to know. This is what's important. We follow the chronology of events, and when we speak of Bible as though it's only one. But the start of these Bibles are starting on the African continent where the knowledge is. Even, as I said, the African Latin version of the Bible, written in North Africa, is from there that we look at the European Latin version that Pope Damasus got Eusebius Hieronymus to write the gospel version of the Bible in around 380 to 383 A.D. This is where we get the New Testament version of the Bible, and all the various Bibles down through the millennials, coming all the way up to the King James Version in 1611 A.D. And one thing that they did do, especially those Bibles that you find in the hotels, and there you see where they've got on the front page the Gideon Bible, they have right on there King James Version of the Bible, diligently compared and revised. Now, they took that off of there because I guess people started to question, what do you mean by diligently compared and revised? Diligently compared to all the various Bibles down to the millennium. With the Eusebius Hieronymus, it became the Latin Vulgate version of the Bible. That was the Bible that ruled Christendom under Catholicism until King James, who rebelled against the Pope of Rome. And that rebellion came about because of us, black people in the first place, because of us. And how could that be? Because the Pope of Rome, who was involved in the slave trade, when Spain and Portugal was giving a lot of the money from the slave trade, the kidnapping of our ancestors from the African continent, the Pope of Rome felt, the Catholic Church felt, that too many European powers getting in on the slave trade, it would reduce that money that they were getting from Spain and Portugal. So they feared that if England, the Dutch, and the others, and the French, if they got involved, then it would not be all the money that they were getting, so they would not let them in. So King James said, I'm the power of this day. We'll write our own Bible. In fact, we won't even take the Latin Vulgate version of the Bible written by Eusebius Hieronymus. In fact, we're going to write our own Bible. So he got Sir Francis Bacon and Henry Saville to sit down and write the King James version of the Bible. This is where the Protestant religion was developed, out of protest against the Pope of Rome for not letting England in on the slave trade. So, again, we were taught that this, and some of us, and some people believe, that the Bible is the infallible word of God. So we don't want to think that the fact that these are many versions of the Bible, you know, we look at this as God's word. And you mentioned paper. When you look at the printing presses and the first printing presses, you know, around the 1500, these Bibles are printed off of printing presses, okay? Prior to that, as I said, it was the codex. It was also the parchment and vellum, but prior to all of that, the earliest was the ancient papyrus. And we're locked in a belief system. And in this belief system, in some cases, we've been brainwashed to the point that we don't want to think outside the European worldview. We've been circumscribed within their circumference of 2,000 years. And we've been taught that everything that we have been taught to believe in, that this is real. So that's why people become very offended, okay, not realizing that these spiritual stories started with us. It's like the plagiarizing of the African culture today, okay? 100 years from now, you know, if we use rap as an example, analogy of what I'm saying, then they'll tell you only white people started that, okay? Like Elvis Presley, you know, they're trying to say he started rock and roll when we know it started with Chuck Berry, okay? and on and on and on. The Swing started with Benny Goodman. So they have always done these things. They got a history. They got an M.O. of plagiarizing and copying African people's ideas and so forth. But the one that they're definitely not going to reveal is the fact that their very religion was copied and corrupted into a European version, when in fact that these were stories that our ancestors created thousands of years. So naturally, we are naturally a spiritual people. Black people are naturally innate a spiritual people. And we gravitate to religion more than anybody else on the planet Earth. It's part of our DNA. And why is that? Because we are the creators of it. When we look at humanity, it's not starting somewhere else, but only on the African continent. So this is thousands of years of spiritual consciousness, of our empirical observation of natural phenomena all around us, whether it's cosmic events, whether it's terrestrial events. Okay, this is the divine word of God right here.
That's where I think that we also, you know, when you say about our African being African African spiritual science, because what intrigues me is that we as African people were scientists. I mean, so my question to you, as you have been around and communicating with our ancient ancestors, could you like bring out what you've seen is the development of those scientists that recognize our spiritual connection to natural phenomena, to actually observing? Because what always intrigued me, we're talking about observing celestial motion without telescopes, I'm assuming.
They didn't really actually need a telescope. I've been in the Sudan, and one beautiful thing about that event, the stars hung there like light bulbs. I've been to Europe many times. I haven't seen the sun, hardly the sun, much less the stars. That clearly tells us who were the stargazers. I mean, I'm even going to Ethiopia and going way up into Axum. I mean, the first thing our group are shocked, they look up to the sky at night, and everybody's just in awe because they've never seen it like that before. We can't see the cosmos of it. There's pollution, there's lights, there's a lot of things. You're actually seeing the galaxies, you're seeing stars, you're seeing things that you would not normally see. So they clearly observe the stars. Even among the Dogon, you know, they've been able to know about the cosmos, and Europeans have tried to make all kind of excuses, and they did not have telescopes. But just to mention the fact that until you go into one of those places, you know, a remote area, you can see the cosmos and see how they observe these cosmic events. Like I said, the Sybil Siptah star system series is outside right now. It's the brightest star, okay? And then as the sun hits Pisces, the sun at 25th, then you're going to see the constellation of Orion. There are seven stars in Orion's belt, seven stars in the constellation of Orion, but three stars in Orion's belt. And you can look for yourself and see those three stars pointing directly at that star. You don't need a telescope to see that; it's right there.
And so these stories that come down to the Christian, these are observations that are placed in these stories in order to be able to pass from one generation to the other. Is that how we should observe what our ancestors were actually doing?
They were keeping a spiritual story alive, and it was personified through the cosmos because the sun is always going to be born out December the 25th. So Heru, okay, was personified as the sun at December the 25th. So we see that star is always going to rise at that particular time. Keep in mind that all religions are made up of allegory and mythology, but behind that mythology, there is some spiritual truth behind it once you unveil that, like we're doing right now, for instance. We see the surface of what we see in the Western version of Christianity and the white idolatry that our people are into. They're into worshiping white images because that's what's out there, the stained glass windows and so forth. They're not revealing the fact that their ancestors created this spiritual science that's still there on the temples. Unfortunately, they built for eternity. The high idea when they built temples and pyramids was to build for eternity, because if we didn't have these temples, then what facts or what proof, okay, could I have when I'm around the country and I'm doing my lecture? As I tell people, I don't come for you to believe in what I'm saying. I come for you to think about what I'm saying and showing from my research. So here's the information. There's a comparative analysis. You're looking at the the carvings from the temples, okay, over 2,000 and 3,000 years ago. And then you're looking at European Western art. And nobody can deny that they copied that directly from Kemet. The question you got to ask, why do we see in European Christian art, okay, where the I call it the Serapis Jesus, because that is the Jesus that they created, not the black Gnostic Christ who actually was fighting against what the Romans were doing. But the question is, why is he wrapped up like a mummy? Why in Kemet do we see our ancestors are wrapped up in a mummy? It's through the mummy that our ancestors saw that was the caress. Okay, that was the spiritual, that was the, what they called the spiritual body that would rise up. It had nothing to do with a physical body. The Romans didn't understand that. So when you look at the European Western art, Jesus is being wrapped up like a mummy, and they used a cross in ancient Kemet. The cross is not a European Western symbol. It had nothing to do with human sacrifice. They corrupted it. That cross was called the Amsu. And all the swathing of the mummy is in a form of a cross that they put on it, showing the spiritual body to rise up. And they looked at nature again. And what did they see in nature? A caterpillar crawling on the ground. It forms into a catacomb. And then we see a metamorphosis takes place. And what happens through this? And what is it called when it's in that form? Okay, it's called a chrysalis. Okay, so here we see that Christ is now coming out of this mummy. No, they copy that from the chrysalis that our ancestors observed through nature, that something that once crawled on the ground now flies through this process of this chrysalis and metamorphosis.
So okay. would it be fair to say that our ancestors are saying that the inner, our spirituality is tied to our interconnectedness with everything around it, and everything is
absolutely
a reflection?
Absolutely, it's tied to everything. It's tied to everything, and that's how our ancestors saw it. When they, in fact, on some of the temples that I show in Aptu or Abydos, and there you see the golden ratio, okay, going back over 5,000 years ago. If we're familiar with the golden ratio, they tell us Fibonacci started it. That golden ratio is the symbol of nature, because the golden ratio is in everything, even our fingerprint. That's how the pyramids were built, in a golden ratio, okay, in a circular motion. So by observing and using that on putting it on this temple, they're acknowledging the fact that these are the natural phenomena, okay, that they refer to as the Shishata, or the mystery system. Paul refers to it, okay, in Corinthians, when he talks about the mystery religion. Okay, so they're studying these things. We get hints, okay, through this, come down through the millennials, coming down to us. But if you don't know ancient Kemet, and Paul is talking about the mystery religion, then we're not seeing the connection that is the mystery system that he copied the idea from. So, it's a strong and powerful journey.
So okay. Were these temples institutions of learning, or were they just for preservation of
the temples? I'm sorry, did you say the temples?
Yes.
Oh, no, the temple, no, let's take the temple of Ipitasut, okay, now it's not called Karnak today. 80,000 students matriculated there. No, these were schools of learning. This is where they learned theology, the theosophy, philosophy, but keep in mind that spirituality and science were one, unlike the Western world, where they had divided up everything and conquered it, okay? So, they saw the body first as a natural spirit. Okay, but there was the physical part of the body. They also understood that we have a natural life thermometer in us. So if your natural life thermometer is very low, then there you see on the Pra'ankh, or the House of Life, before Western hospitals, you see the medical instruments, the Imhotep had to do surgery. But if your natural thermometer, life thermometer was high enough, you could cure yourself. But if that's why when doctors today come in and tell somebody, well, you got 30 days to live, and then they're shocked to find out that person outlives the doctor that told them that, because their natural thermometer life was high enough that they could cure themselves. And this is what our ancestors taught. Okay, this is the natural things that our ancestors saw, that everything was tied as one. It wasn't separated, whereas the European, everything is, I mean, even with the atom bomb, our ancestors studied the atom. They didn't make atom bombs, okay? But they understood the whole spiritual idea of the atomic theory or the atomic energy. But they understood that nature could open up divine things for you, and it can open up some wicked forces for you, like the atomic bomb. Now, can we imagine if one is looking at these natural phenomena from a spiritual space where we could really be at, what is really there waiting for us, and it can only be awakened from a whole spiritual point of view? And this is where, this is why the European, okay, when can never open up a spiritual realm when they're looking at these natural phenomena with Mutnechik that we refer to it as, is now called Mother Nature today. They, I mean, it can unlock, as our ancestors said, Sethian forces, okay, known as Isfet or evil, or it can open up those Haru, okay, or spiritual forces for you.
And is that why Ma'at was so important and integral to the understanding of that science?
Oh, absolutely. Ma'at was the cosmic goddess. Keep in mind, they didn't have any misogyny, so the Ma'at represented cosmic order of truth, justice, and righteousness. And this is how they saw these things, and that's why it's so important to understand when we read the Bible, if we knew our story, we would understand ideas that's been passed down. As I said, these Bibles were written in Alexandria, Egypt. Okay, so they were copying ideas. So we see Ma'at in the Bible. We see Ma'at in Proverbs 21, verse 1 and 3. Now, first of all, before I even say that, Ma'at represented that your heart, representing your moral behavior on earth, had to be weighed with the feather of Ma'at, okay, to be balanced. They understood you would do some bad things, but long as your good deeds outweighed your bad deeds, and then as long as it weighed in balance. So going into the spiritual realm, that here you, I have not robbed, I have not stolen, I have not killed, okay? And here we see that Anpu would take the heart and put it on there, and then the African goddess Ma'at would take her feather in this judgment and put it on the scale. So when we read in Proverbs 21, verse 1 and 3, the king's heart is in the hand of the Lord, and the Lord weighs the heart, do what is right and just, that's Ma'at. That came down from ancient teachings of our ancestors. It ends up in the present-day Bibles today, and the most noted one being the King James Version.
You know, if I may, Elliot, one more question. Mm-hmm. Brother Kwesi, I can keep. I have many questions, so I apologize if I get.
Oh, no, I understand, my brother. These things, I evoke a lot of questions.
Yeah, because I was in a listening to a discussion, and they were talking about the scale. In the judgment scene, and the question was, when you look at the scale, it's even, so that
it must be even. Yes, the scale, your heart must be even with the feather of Ma'at. Yes,
and that's before even the, you know, so that the is that, would you project that our ancestors were saying our nature is primarily good, but through our living condition, our heart can become heavier, and that's why it needed to be weighed against the scale of Ma'at.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. They understood that. They understood that whole moral behavior, and it was based off of that whole spiritual consciousness of the goddess Ma'at. And as I said before, interesting that they would use a goddess to represent that moral code, okay, going into the hall of Ma'at, represented by 12, okay, spiritual Netarus that we would call angels today, and a star making 13. Now, isn't that the same thing we get the 12 disciples and Jesus makes 13?
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at the judicial system. Here we see the European white female holding the scales. And when I do my African origin of Freemasonry lectures at different places, and I show and compare that with the scales of Ma'at, Even the symbol of the feather is on there once you're able to see it, once you're able to look at the justice or the judicial system that they have of the white female holding the scales. She's actually got the feather of Ma'at on the scale. Okay, it's in the art form once you're able to see it, and people just gasp when they see that. And that's been the biggest fear in talking about ancient Kemet in the Western world. It's got to be extraterrestrials. It's got to be somewhere else. It can't be on the African continent. African people didn't have anything to do with this, even though you go back and see the colossals and the monuments and the largest colossal on the planet Earth called Ra Horem Akhet that they called the Sphinx. Clearly, this is an African colossal, the largest on the planet Earth and the oldest. Here you clearly see that they are not extraterrestrials, but the fear is keep the African mind away from Africa, even though everyone else down through the millennia, from Europeans and Asians, all have come in and benefited and plundered from the study of this ancient knowledge. that is still with us to this present day. Our children are in school studying about Pythagoras, Apothenus, and the Pythagorean theorem. Okay, so they're trapped into the deification of Europeans, okay, Archimedes and Socrates and all these Europeans. And here you have in Kemet, but Tahotep that predate them by thousands of years, okay, also Imhotep, okay, Amenhotep, the son of Hapu, on and on and on, when these Greeks didn't exist yet because they came into Kemet to study this ancient knowledge. But what has held up the pillars of white supremacy, okay, Western world? Is white idolatry. We've been worshiping them. We've been taught that we were savages and heathens. So, of course, we've been brainwashed to look that civilization and God and God's people comes through them. And this is the worst form of enslavement. And the final emancipation is coming out of that, and Kemet plays a major role in pulling, as David Walker told us, okay, in studying of ancient Kemet, okay, this plays up because we got the evidence. It's not some place that we're saying it used to be or making up things, but the monuments and temples are there, and that's the biggest fear. In fact, I put a clip on YouTube. It's called Ashra Kwesi and speaks on the Rosetta Stone and the Medu Netcher. I put it up there to show it. There's a point in there, and back in 1988, it may not look like me now, but that was me back there, and I'm showing where they're chiseling out and hacking out the Medu Netcher. Okay, so they're frantically erasing the Medu Netcher. They know, okay, that the African mind will awaken, that once we get out of and see that these things were copied, that we've been brainwashed into believing that what we have been taught and seeing these images and stained glass windows and these white babies all over the place, all over the country, and the whole world going to stop at December the 25th to worship a white baby. I mean, this is the epitome of white supremacy, Christianity, and white idolatry. We talk about idolatry. We're worse idolatrous in worshiping Europeans.
I just wanted to mention we're in conversation this evening with Baba Ashra Kwesi, the topic African spiritual science and the Christmas holiday. If anybody wants to ask a question or make a comment, you can do that by dialing 215.
You mentioned the symbols. I forgot to mention some of those symbols you were talking about.
Oh, no. We'll get to it because I want to bring some of those up. 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Baba Kwesi, before we get to some of those symbols, let me ask you a question based on your knowledge of and being in the temples. And I'll do it from kind of like a layman because you talked about the reason that our ancestors wrap other ancestors in a mummy or like a mummified type of condition, and you made an analogy of the butterfly and the chrysalis. So if you look at, and I'll use the Bible as certain stories, when our people ended up in certain situations, we would be able to expect certain spirits to come back. Now, I'll put it in that fashion because I want you to expand on it if I'm right or wrong. Do you think that our ancestors had the knowledge to know that the spirit of a certain ancestor would come back in the body of others later on, and they kind of knew the time period to expect this to happen?
A lot of their spiritual teaching was based off of that. It was based off of terms like Ka, as I mentioned earlier, meaning spirit. Ba was the soul. And they saw that the when they mummified the body and put the body in the tombs in the West Bank of the Valley of the Kings, this is spectacular, the 18th dynasty, they're building 63 tombs here. They're not building pyramids any longer because the invasions and the resources of building pyramids is too much. So they're building these tombs. And, I mean, it's just magnificent. You feel like you're walking in a subway. But anyway, they built down into the ground. And here, when they made the sarcophagus in there, the whole idea they had what is called the spirit door. Okay, the Ka door, and it looks just like a door, but it's not a real door for us humans, for the physical body, but for once the Ka, okay, left the body, and it went to be judged. Okay, in that spiritual realm. And it came back to be joined with the Ba, okay? And the Ba is the soul. So we got what is known as the Ka Ba, the spirit and the soul that's been joined as one. But there were other aspects of this spiritual realm. There was what is called the Kabet. Okay, the Kabbalah is known as the spiritual shadow. Now, I have to speak on this. There have been times where I've always felt the presence of someone, okay, around me. I remember as a teenager, I'm telling friends that we're going to, I lived in Pittsburgh at the time and growing up, and we wanted to go to Akron, Ohio. And I'm the one saying, hey, let's go to Akron, Ohio. You know, we wanted to go to Akron, Ohio. They, you know, they have a lot of parties there and so forth. And I'm trying to gather up my friends. But once they came together, I didn't want to get, you know, there was something feeling, I was feeling something that said, don't get in the car. Don't get in the car. And then my friends were mad. You the one said, you know, let's go to Akron. I said, well, you know, I changed my mind. I don't want to go, you know. But they all jumped in the car, and they took off and went to Akron. I didn't go. There was something told me, don't get in the car. Well, they all died. Mm. They went over a mountain. They were all killed. See, so that's what they call the Kabbalah. That there's a spiritual shadow that is there, okay, that is there. This, that presence is guide. It helps guide us, okay, through this passage called life, okay? And it's when people ignore that Kabbalah, okay, or that spirit that they refer to as the Kabbalah, that could be an ancestor. It could be a grandfather. It could be a grandmother. It could be, that's what the Kabbalah is, okay? And also when a person is born, okay, into this life, they take on that spirit. That's called the Sahu. The Sahu is the spiritual body. That's the body that left. See, this is, and that's what's shocking when I show our group on the Temple of Heru, and here you see what is called the Dancing Ka. Okay, he's got one leg down, one, and his arms are up, okay, and it's carved on the temple. Now, when you look at Leonardo da Vinci's picture, now, think of the picture, I know you've seen it, of the Dancing Christ. It's the European image of the Jesus. Do you see that picture in your mind?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was copied from the Temple of Heru. It was carved there. But see, the Romans took it literally. They thought the physical body would rise up, but that's called the Dancing Ka, the Dancing Sahu. He's dancing because he's free of the bandages, but he's not in the physical realm. He's a spirit, all right? So when you go to King Tutankhamun's tomb, and there you see the Sim priest, where he's performing something for King Tutankhamun. King Tutankhamun is next to Asar. Asar is known as the Lord of the Perfect Black. Okay, this is the black divinity. He is the Ka. He is the Kareth. And King Tutankhamun is becoming one with Asar, becoming one with his Ka, becoming one with his Kareth, or to keep it clear, with his Christ. Not a European image now. Okay, but it's spiritual development. But it's the priests that have to perform this act that you see on King Tutankhamun's tomb in the West Bank. And even though it's the smallest tomb, but it's famous because it was found intact by when Carter and some of the others in Carnarvon plundered it. But here we see that the Sim priests are performing to make him see again, not in this life, but the afterlife. Okay, to make him talk again, not in this life, but the afterlife, where he's raising him from the dead, not the physical death, but the Sahu, the spiritual body, to go into the afterlife. This is how that ends up in the Gospels, where Jesus raised one from the dead. He made one see again. He made one talk again. This is where, when we look at Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, when they were writing these ideas, and this knowledge was being taken from Alexandria, Egypt, it came from the temples up and down the Nile, that was already told by our ancestors and carved on those tombs like King Tutankhamun that I just mentioned. This is where these ideas are coming from. But they took it literally. And this is what the Gnostics were saying to the Romans. There's no such thing as a physical body rising up out the grave. It's a spiritual body. So when they saw the carving of the Sahu, they didn't understand something you could not see. That's the spiritual aspect that they could not understand. And they took, and that's from that, from to this day on, Western version of Christianity is based off of a physical resurrection. But it was the Essenes, and some of these Essenes who were Gnostic Hebrews. They understood, okay? And that's when they found the Nag Hammadi writing, okay? In Nag Hammadi, they found some of the Gnostic writing that some of the Gnostics had buried because it was the Romans who were after them and they were persecuting them, and they hid them. And this is where they were first read with the Gnostics, how they saw the spiritual realm that was based off of the ancient spiritual teachings of Kemet, and they were a conduit, so to say. And the formulation of the Western version of Christianity, who was in the way were the Gnostics, who were the knowers of the truth. That's what the Gnostics meant. They were the knowers of the spiritual truth. And they were Gnostic Christians, and some of them were Gnostic Hebrews, okay, who understood what this was all about. They were Essenes order as well, okay, and the Romans exterminated that started the persecution of the North African Gnostic Christians. Nobody talks about that. We don't talk. I mean, the preachers need to talk about the North African Christians. Then I think it would start on the road of us slowly getting back and stop having a fear of ourselves. And what I mean by a fear of ourselves, a fear of our ancestral knowledge that when we start to seek it out and start to learn this knowledge, after all, they have been studying it for years, okay, for millennia. But we've been stuck in this fear that is pagan and heathen and devil worship. If you start to investigate this, because they don't want you touching this, because you cannot have a people in spiritual enslavement and white idolatry once they're able to see without question they came in and stole this knowledge. After all, we are a stolen people. I think it's an intelligent question to also ask, what else did you steal?
You know, let me break off into some of these symbols that we see, because you talked earlier in the conversation, Baba Kwesi, about some of the early ecumenical conferences where they were formulating the Western version of Christianity. Some of the things, because I'm going to mention some of the things because I want you to expound on them. The heathen or the Greek observance of Saturnalia was interjected when they formulated the Western version of Christianity. They needed, I guess, holy days to uphold it. And they used some of the culture that they were already involved in to interject or to put into the formulation of these observances from their point of view. And this is just me saying, I want you to expand on it. The holiday of Saturnalia, which Romans observed, is almost a staple in this current observance of Christmas. Talk about that holiday and what it was before I break off into some of these other symbols.
When we go back, when we see that, why is it that we have Santa Claus, we have the European image of the Jesus, and I'm sure it's confusing for our children. I mean, who are you going to like best, one that's going to give you gifts? Or this image of the picture that they show you. And they continue to have their pagan images, the European pagan. These are the real pagan images. We want to talk about pagan. We're talking about Saturnalia. This was a worship that they had in the Greco-Roman period, where people would get drunk. They would have fornication. They would have all kind of homosexual behaviors going on. It'd be a mad frenzy of sex going on, because they worshipped Saturnalia. And before he was Saturnalia, by the way, he was Cronus. Anyone familiar with European Western art, Cronus is, and this is a famous Western art of Cronus too, by the way. He's a white guy with a beard and a lot of hair all over himself, and he's eating, he's got a baby in his hand, but the head of the baby is bitten off, and the blood is running down the baby, okay? This is Cronus. And the reason this art is there, this Western art, because Cronus feared that the baby would grow up and overtake his throne. So he ate his baby. And this is what we see. So Cronus becomes Saturnalia. It goes from Greece to Rome. He becomes Saturnalia. And here he's rode across the sky with goats and so forth, and where he literally ate his babies because he feared they would grow up. But they would have all types of orgies and mad, sick, sexual, homosexual behaviors, all kind of stuff, during this time of the year, December the 25th, who they were worshiping Saturnalia. In Germany, he was called Kris Kringles, okay? He was equally carried across the sky, okay, with goats and so forth. And when we look at the name Santa Claus and we look at a Roman Catholic, okay, there's a Roman Catholic named St. Nicholas, and he was actually called St. Capulet, okay? That's why we see is this is all associated with picking up the gross national product. But during the 4th century, St. Nicholas was a bishop of Myra. Now, when we look at Santa Claus' nickname and St. Nick, and we go to Webster's Dictionary, what's the name that we see for the devil? Was St. Nick. Am I correct? Mm. In Webster's Dictionary, isn't that another name for the devil?
You know, I'm not familiar. But
if anyone would go to Webster's Dictionary and look up St. Nick, which means, according to Webster's research, the devil. So here we see this is their satanic holiday in the worship of Satan or Saturnalia. That's another name for Santa Claus, was Saturnalia. So it was all around Satan worship. We come out of Halloween, swing through Thanksgiving Day, and come right into Saturnalia's Day and all these holidays. Now, when I talked about Cronus or Saturnalia eating his babies and the blood flowing down the baby, the question we got to ask, why is that elf always attached to the candy cane? And why is that candy cane red going down the white? Well, anyone who will look up and go through their computer and go look up Cronus, you can go find him on Google and Google him, and you will see Cronus eating his babies, and you'll see the red going down the body of that baby just like a candy cane. This is the symbolism that is still in the holiday. Now, when we look at the pine tree, okay, I talk about this a lot because the guy a year ago almost hit me. He's driving down the street with a pine tree on top of his car, drinking a bottle of Blue Nun. Or maybe it was Paradise Wine. He was drinking something. I assumed it was, you know, they named their religion after their liquor. So, but that's another story. But anyway, that pine tree is a German. It's a German symbol. And why did the Germans use the pine tree? Why do they have this tree? Now, in Germany, in the Germanic tribes, all of nature became barren. But the pine tree, they call the evergreen tree, it stayed green year-round. And that pine tree represented Thor, that Thursday is named after, by the way. They worship Thor, okay? The father is Woden, that Wednesday is named after. So the names of these Germanic tribes are still in the names of the week. Freya is the mother that Friday is named after, and Saturday is Saturnalia. So here we see that they actually... you see, when the Romans came in and started to conquer the Germanic tribes, okay, some we see tied up with the Romans and the Greeks, some we see with the Germanic tribes. So they're all, okay, we've got a stew of these European pagan symbols coming out of Greece, Rome, and the Germanic tribes. They bow down and worship that tree representing Thor. And they, when the Germans came here to America, they brought that pine tree with them. And that became part of the Christmas holiday. That's one of the main fixtures. They cut down half the forest, okay, to worship Thor and the symbol of this pine tree that they take and put gifts under it. And as I always say, because people would, you know, they don't like to hear these things. Like I was on KGLH, that's Stevie Wonder station out there in L.A., and Carl Nelson, many years I was on his show. That's way back in 1992. And I'll never forget, this guy always called in to challenge a lot of the things I was saying. His name was Ray. And he said, I dare you talk about my Christmas. We've always liked a little rum with a little eggnog inside, and we've always liked the smell of the pine. All right? So his mind is locked into that. And he brings up the Bible, and he starts to justify things and so forth. And he said, the Bible is the word of God. I said, well, then you should go to Jeremiah chapter 10, verse 2 and 6. And it'll tell you that the it says, learn not the way of the heathen. Now, heathen is a German term. This is where we get the name heathen from, the Germans. They were heath dwellers, okay, because the Romans saw them as heathen. All right, the Greeks and Romans, I said earlier, they were introduced to civilization by way of Africa, by way of Kemet. So, it says, learn not the way of the heathen, for the custom of the people are in vain, for they cutteth the tree out of the forest. That's the Germanic tribes, and with axe, and they deck it with silver and with gold. What are people doing today? That exact same thing. And when you show that to them, they are shocked, but they're not going to stop. Because here we've been brainwashed into, it's like Las Vegas out there right now. When you got bells and whistles and alcohol and liquor, okay, again, just like in Las Vegas, you can drink all the liquor you want because you're going to spend that money. The same thing with this Christmas holiday. Okay, they want plenty of liquor stores to stay open 24 hours to keep people drunk, okay, so they can get that money to go out there and buy that gift to help pick up the gross national product that's been lagging at the end of the year.
Go ahead, Richard.
Well, I was going, you know, the question came to me, or what I had down is I wanted to go to another place, and that is the importance of, if any, the Temple of Dendra.
Go ahead.
As a part of our...
Het Heru? Yeah, it's in the city of Dendera called Het Heru.
And I wanted to, can you elaborate on it? Well, let me ask this. Was this built many times in the same place?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that? I didn't hear
Was that architectural, that temple built at the same place many times?
Yes, it was. In fact, many of the temples, when the Greeks came in, they came in and usurped a lot of the temples, and they got African Kemetic builders to rebuild for them. Okay, and many, in some cases, even putting their images on it. And this is one of the cases with the Temple of Heru in the city of Dendera. And there's a crypt there, and there's a crypt there that talks about this temple going back to the Shimsu Heru. Now, the question is, who are the Shimsu Heru? The Shimsu Heru are the followers of Heru. Now, who is Heru? That's the spiritual son of Aset, who was born of Immaculate Conception, and was born on December the 25th. In fact, I'm not going to get away from the temple, but I just want to say that there's another, the Temple of Heru, when I take our groups there, there's a chapel there where he's, and that is the chapel where they even have an Egyptian Torah books where he's born on December the 25th in that chapel. Now, back to the Temple of Heru, the Temple of Heru. Heru is an African goddess, okay, that, and her Zook type is a cow. Now, again, just like we see Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John represented as cows, eagles, and so forth, those are symbols that they're using. The same thing with Kemet, they use symbols. So why is she represented as a cow? Because she represents the great mother, okay? She's the surrogate mother for Heru. Now, the question that we have to ask when we do a comparative analysis with this, when we go now to the Yuletide, and we go to the Yuletide, and we always see the manger, which we see the European image of the white Mary and the white Jesus, okay, as the baby. And we see this cow in the manger. The question is, why is that cow in the manger? Is that animal worship? That's what they would say about Kemet. That cow is in the manger because that cow is Heru. Here is what we see through the symbolism, how they plagiarized the idea, where we see that Heru was the surrogate mother for Heru. And here we see that the cow is there right next to the European image of this Jesus that I refer to as the Serapis Jesus. Even the name Mary, Heru's name was, her name was Murray of love, Heru Murray, that means she means love. The Medunecher, or what the Greeks refer to as the hieroglyphic, the symbol for Murray is an A turned sideways. It looks like an A turned sideways, and there are two feathers. That in the Medunecher language means Murray. They literally took from Murray and made the name Mary. It means love. It came from ancient Kemet. So when we do that comparison, we can see where that idea came from. But the temple itself in that crypt, it talks about that was an earlier temple there that goes back to the Shimsu Heru, the followers of Heru. Then there's another crypt in that same area that talks about that also Pepi II of the sixth dynasty of the Old Kingdom. We're talking about over 4,000 years ago. He talks about how he built onto the temple. And then we come down to the 18th dynasty. Okay, we're talking about hundreds of years later after the Old Kingdom of Pepi II. We're coming down to Menkheperatu Udimes, okay, who the Europeans refer to as Thutmose III. And there he's talking about how he built onto the temple of Heru at this time. So we see how these Europeans came in and the Greeks who built onto the temple. Now, when we look at the temple of Ipitasuta Karnak, those temples are strictly Kemetic temples. You don't see the Greeks took and built structures inside the temple, okay, but the temple structure itself goes back to over 4,000 years ago. And so this is what we see when we come and see some of the Greeks. In fact, some of them even came in, like when we go to the Temple of Aset, and there we see where Neo Dionysus is. Here we see Ptolemy the 12th, who calls himself the Neo Dionysus. And what is the Neo Dionysus? The New Osiris, or the Kemetic name, the New Asar. So they were even taking on the spiritual divinity, of concepts of ancient Kemet. But when you go there and see the Temple of Aset, you see her chiseled out. They chiseled out her because she's in a Madonna and Child, but they didn't chisel out the sun that's on top of her head, all right, because she's holding the baby, Heru, and he is the Sa-Ra, the Son of God, the Son of the Sun. That's why the European white Jesus always has a sun behind his head. They're copying that same idea from ancient Kemet. But they didn't chisel out the sun because of that whole spiritual idea of going to church on Sunday and having sunrise service and associating the sun with the Serapis Jesus. During the time that even though we're in the winter solstice now, the birth of the sun, we're going to see the resurrection of the sun. When is this going to take place? That's going to take place during the time of spring, during the time when the sun is crossing over the equator. Everything is resurrecting out of the depth of winter. Those of you who live back, you live back there in Philadelphia, it's cold, it may be snowing and everything, you're going to look forward to.
Oh, don't talk about it.
Well, you're going to look forward to the spring when you start to see everything resurrecting around you.
All right? Yes, sir.
That's the resurrection of the sun. They just took the Serapis Jesus, image that we see. And every time we see a white Jesus, we have to start looking at that as the Serapis Jesus that they actually created. But you're going to see all of nature resurrecting, and that's why you see those crosses. Those of you who see crosses with a circle in the middle of the cross, that's the resurrection of the sun during the time of the spring solstice. That is the time of the resurrection that goes back to ancient Kemet. This is the ancient spiritual science that our ancestors told about thousands of years ago, and that I said has been incorporated in these European ecumenical conferences, like the Conference of Nicene, in 325, where Serapis was given a divine spirit and renamed Jesus Christ. And I'm going to just give a synopsis of some of them, like the Constantinople. And Ares, a black man who was at that conference, who refused to go along with what they were doing. He said, "You're corrupting this." But this is where the Nicene Creed, and that became the Byzantine Roman government where they started to issue this, and one of the worst conferences was Ephesus in 431 A.D., Mary's title, the Mother of God, was made official and incorporated the prayers. And all one has to do is go to Webster's Dictionary and look under Mother of God, and it'll tell you the title of the Virgin Mary sanctioned by the Council of Ephesus in 431 A.D. That's in Webster's Dictionary. And it was in 431 A.D. where they de-Africanized the goddess Aset and taken the word Mary, the Kemetic word for love, and making this Mary and making this European Mary a virgin goddess, and the worshiping and the deifying of the white female, and some black men have been worshiping her ever since.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll continue the conversation. We've got about 25 minutes left in the program. You can get involved in the conversation. I know you're out there listening, and there's a lot of knowledge being dispensed by Bob Asher Kwesi, but you can get involved in the conversation, too, by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832, African Spiritual Science in the Christmas Holidays, the topic of discussion this evening, and we'll be right back.
Tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kanban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard this special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
Darkness no longer, a child is born. Mothers shed tears of joy as baby takes his lungs. But daddy's not there where he ought to be. Somewhere in Georgia, skinning and shooting craps on his knees. Another victim born out here in the hood. And based on statistics, it really ain't all good. Welfare takes the tab, and daddy can't sign, and it can't be seen, the family becomes a crime. The hunt is on, and brother, you're the prey. Serving time in jail, it just ain't the way. I'm living so hard, babe, that my hair's gray. We got to make a change, it's a brand new day. Operation in flux, and it's on the way. We just marched a million plus the other day. Look, look, we all witnessed the sweat rolling down Miss Liberty's head. She knows the sleeping giant, she's no longer sleeping dead. Oh, what a fulfillment of prophecy. Let us teach the children, freedom's never been free. It's okay to cry, go ahead and cry. Cause Jesus wept, but hope and faith be kept. It's a new day. The die has been cast, and there's no need to fear. Cause people, the answer to your prayers are here. Sister Mary, don't you weep. Tell mother not to moan. We need the love, and daddy's coming home. There's no need to worry. The time's dictated plan. Mother Earth's given birth to a brand new man. Sister, I know you're misunderstood.
But hold on to your man, cause the future looks good. There's a new day,
a new world order, a brand new day.
There's a new change.
Welcome back. It's time for an awakening. We're in conversation this evening with historian Baba Ashra Kwesi. The topic we were talking about this evening was African spiritual science in the Christmas holiday. And you can get involved in the conversation in the time we have left in the program by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Baba Kwesi, you know, I just want to reiterate this because it's something that I really feel strongly about, and you talked about it earlier in the program, that our ancestors were smart enough to know that during a time of peril and when it would be necessary for help for our people, that spirits would be revived to help them, to give them aid, similar to the Bible story of Europeans during the time of Roman domination, knowing that the oppressed people in the areas of northern Africa, that saviors for the people would arise to try to help them. I think it's the same thing now. You see a lot of this stuff, the reiteration of COINTELPRO, this black identity extremist, keeping an eye on black people, always keeping our children, especially stuff directed at our children, alternative lifestyles, keeping the minds of our children befuddled, because I think that they're smart enough to realize that it's going to be saviors arisen among our people. The same spirits that we've been talking about tonight, whether you're talking about David Walker, Nat Turner, Denmark Vesey, or Marcus Garvey, Malcolm or Martin, that these spirits would come back among our people because of the state that our people are in. Talk about that from your perspective as an historian and your knowledge of our ancestors.
Well, yes, brother, you're absolutely right. Well, let's keep in mind that Gage or Hoover was his name. I think that's what his name was. That's what he said, that we have to watch out for the black messiah. The fear, in fact, he said, of a black messiah. So that's what they fear. As I always say, Brother Booker, someone knows something about us that they don't want us to know about ourselves.
Okay.
And that is that genetic memory bank. Keep in mind that we are a people who have been on this planet for countless thousands, if not millions of years. And again, we were not just wandering around waiting. We have all that spiritual, everything that ever was is still in us. And they understand this, that they're only babies on this planet. If I can make the quote from the when the Greeks first came into Kemet, and just to make the analogy. Now, they were making an analogy, but not it was not a literal situation. But they said, and the Greeks asked, well, how old is Kemet? It's called Egypt today. They said, well, Kemet is so old that we remember when the sun rose in the west. Okay, so... They were saying that to make the analogy that Kemet is very, very old compared to these Greeks. So today, when we look at these Europeans and we look at the Western world as we know it, okay, what date do we write? Okay, 2017. Now, let's understand that date. When we understand that, as we spoke of, my brother spoke of a minute ago of the Temple of Heru in Dendera. And there, what's special about that temple is that they have a zodiac in the ceiling of that temple. In fact, they have about three or four zodiacs in that temple, but the most famous is the one that Napoleon took the original, and they put a replica up there. But here we see that this zodiac, where the sun stays in each constellation for 2,155 years, making up the great year in round numbers of 26,000 years. Mm-hmm. Now, they had to observe that at least once to get that great year. Now, we understand that a great year is 2,155 years. To understand that, Europeans have not experienced a great year yet, not even one great year. When we look at the time period of their 2017, which we shouldn't be writing anyway, we should at least be writing 6,257 based on that star of Sibyl Sipta, or the Star System series, as the Romans called it, based off of the birth of Heru at December the 25th, that's been corrupted into the birth of this European image of this Jesus at December the 25th. But our ancestors saw that it was through Heru that he symbolized, okay, that representation that you just mentioned, that he represented that spiritual child would come, okay, that the birth, okay, immaculate conception, it means clean. A clean conception would take place, and in that would be a savior. There would always be a savior that would come for the people. At the same time, evoking the spirit that we all have, meaning that even as the savior Heru, or the names that our ancestors called it down through the millennia of that savior that would come, that we all have it. That they had to come to evoke it to let us know that you have it is there. Rise it up. Okay, and to evoke that spirit, okay, so that's what the Romans feared, okay, that once you evoke that which is naturally in a part of you, okay, that they could rise up and then the Romans could not oppress the people. So when we see today with all the things that's going out there with the Trilateral Commission, don't think that Trump, okay, is out here, that he's out there on his own. This is an order. And he is the representation for the order and the way they want things to be run. And they got us fixated on just this one person, just like the Serapis Jesus. We're fixated on this one picture when there's a whole order behind that picture, a white supremacy Christendom that was created, okay, by Theodosius in 380 A.D. that started the Catholicism, that started the Western version of Christianity. So that's what we've got to understand when we see him. So when we look at a savior that would come up to fight against this wicked Isfet or our evil energy, then yes, one person may come, but it may be that person that has the spiritual ka, okay, or that spirit that would rise up and that we would naturally start to see within ourselves, that we would equally rise up, because that person is not going to do it by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes the people, the masses of the people, but they got to realize that they have that ka, they have that spirit to rise up to fight against tyranny and oppression. But it takes the unity, the collective unity. It's like nature. You know, the lion doesn't eat when all the African buffalo, okay, circle up. In fact, he may even kill the lion. But it's only when he got them in a stampede, all right, and they're running wild, then he's going to eat that day. So that's how they have us. We're running wild and calling about Trumpism and everything else when he's epitomizing exactly what Michael Bradley said, okay? As Michael Bradley's book,
The White Man Inheritance.
The White Man Inheritance, Prehistoric Sources of Western Man Racism, Sexism, and Aggression. That is, so this is what white America's looking. They're looking at themselves. Trump represent that Isfet energy, this innately in the European, and Trump represents that. That's what they don't like. He's showing them their face. He's rising up that, let me just make it plain, he's the Antichrist. He's the anti, when I mean Antichrist, I'm not talking about a devil. I'm talking about an anti-divine spirit.
Okay.
So when we go back to what you said about the divine spirit, or those ones, those saviors that come before us, yes, it's that kind of anti-divine spirit that makes that divine spirit of our people come forward, because the wickedness is now, we up against the wall.
I know it.
It's right in your face. You can't escape now. It's for real. See, we got sedated by Obama. See, everybody, I mean, there was black for somebody. There's a guy out there. He was out there on the lecture circuit talking about racism don't exist no more when Obama was president. I said, well, we lost our minds. I mean, we got sedated that bad that we thought that we think that Obama, the racist, we're going to say racism don't exist no more? And it's like the ancestors gave us a quick wake-up call and brought Trump. Not the ancestors didn't bring Trump, but the wicked energy brought Trump. But again, so we have to look at the reality, and we look at a savior coming. You know, we have to look at that as that we all are the savior. Okay, but it takes one to evoke that spirit in us to rise up. I mean, look how Malcolm moved the people. Peace be upon him. Look how Marcus Garvey moved the people. Peace be upon him. Mm-hmm. Elijah Muhammad moved the people. Peace be upon him. Harriet Tubman, how she moved the people. See, so and it's just keeping that. So that's what they fear. And I heard you say that they're talking about the black identity extremism. This is not new. It happened in the early 1700s when we were connecting to our Africanness, as Dr. Clark spoke of in his African World Revolution book, when he talked about when Africans were starting to identify institutions as African. Prince Hall never called the lodge Prince Hall. He called it the African Lodge.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he called it. But black folks became afraid of their Africanness when white folks started to attack the institution, so they started to take that off. In fact, AME Church, okay, that's the leftover of that period, the African Methodist Episcopal Church. Some black folks don't even know that A means African,
mm-hmm,
in the acronym. Okay, so that's what we see. So when we come down to the 1700s, and then we see during the time of Martin Delaney, every time we rose up a consciousness of our blackness, there was an attack.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we come down to the time period, the era that I came through, okay, coming up in the late 70s and the 80s, when the whole cultural African-centered movement was taking place, and the African communiversities, as Bobby Wright called it back in the day, these communiversities that I was a part of, and even though in white folks' schools, I wasn't being educated, I was being trained to do a job, because when we come out of white folks' universities, they just trained us to do a job for them. So I call it training, not education. Because if you come out here and you don't know nothing about yourself, then you have to ask if you're educated. But back to what I was saying. So, but it was these communiversities that had Dr. Ben, Dr. Clark, and Dr. Khalid Abdul-Muhammad, and so many others who were out there on the forefront, Dr. Francis Wells, and peace be upon all of them. They were all out there. KRS-One, okay, they were early rap and Public Enemy. It was positive rap, okay? They equally were a part of or participated in those African communiversities. All right, so we're coming through the 80s. There's a whole movement now, okay? Bookstores are flourishing. Brothers and sisters are reading everything the brothers and sisters are putting out there now. And all of a sudden, here white folks are starting to put a magnifying glass on down on what black folks are doing. It first started in the university because black folks were the Black Studies Department, when that was started, where it was like a pacifier that they gave us after the revolt of the insurrection of the 60s. So they gave us the Black Studies Department, and the students started to turn it into serious education for liberation by bringing in brothers and sisters and lecturing, and many scholars, Dr. Ben, Dr. Clark, and even myself and many others were coming in there lecturing to the students, and they were challenging the professors when they were talking about Pythagoras and Socrates, and they would bring up Imhotep and Tahutep and predate them. See, now, here we see that the Western civilization, now we're seeing cracks in the pillars now of white supremacy. They're not deifying it. We see inner city students are coming out of going into the universities, okay, barely making it, now are becoming straight A students, all right? And so now they're trying to say, where are they getting this information from, okay? We can't even teach in the class because they're bringing information that predates Western civilization. And they said it's those African-centered classes. In fact, at Purdue University, I was there lecturing. A brother brought me in, a good brother, but, you know, he did not know how to be a spook. And he had my DVDs, and he would show the DVDs to the students and inspiring the students. And here comes this European Jew who, and he gave, at that time there were VHS tapes to him, mine and I think Brother Khalid and a couple other people, Dr. Ben. And he came back and said, take those tapes off the shelf. And the brother said, I'm not taking these tapes off the shelf. They're inspiring young students. That's the students who were barely making it now coming straight-A students. So he protested, went to the dean, took a year, and they finally got him to take those tapes off the shelf. But he didn't stop there. His name is Mailer. He made it his business to set up his own program to stop all African scholars from lecturing at the college campus. In fact, his letter that he has out on myself and many others is still on the internet. And that started the early attack on the African-centered movement, and is even before that as well. You know, and so this is what started the Diane Ravages and the messengers and the attack. And when Dr. Jeffries was on Newsweek, and that equally, when they saw the threat of this African-centered knowledge, and then when they put the Cleopatra on the front of Newsweek with a red, black, and green Africa earring on, and then they started to talk about everybody in Newsweek, now is a war. There was a war going on at this time, and many of our people didn't even know it was a war on the whole African-centered consciousness at this time, all right? And this is where they started to call it multiculturalism. You can't teach African. You have to teach multiculturalism. Africa became some type of McCarthyism, just like the attack in the 1700s. So when they're talking about black identity extremism, okay, that is this is the same tactic from the 1700s, the 1800s, the 1900s, with Marcus Garvey, coming all the way down to Malcolm, coming all the way down to our era, you know, the whole multicultural era that they're pushing out, all the way up to today.
Methods haven't changed, huh?
We've got to connect this. The tactic is the same tactic. So your show would be a black identity extremist show. I would be a black identity extremist. Right. But they're smart, Brother Booker, because they know the majority of our people are afraid. Majority of our people are going to start running from our identity as we ran from the whole African-centered movement. You had professors in black academia, okay, and the faculty who was pushing the African-centered knowledge and bringing in speakers and were very progressive. And then when the attack on the paychecks and so forth, and they had to pay their mortgages and so forth, everything shut down, you see. So it's the same tactics, but they realized that at that time, that's how do we become Negroes and colors in the big N-word, because black folks were afraid to use Africa because they knew white folks were attacking the identity of African. So what is this going to do with this black identity extremist now? What are they saying? See, they're looking at the majority of our people. See, we are a very small percentage of the consciousness of our people, but they know the majority of our people are like those African buffalo out there, okay? They're running right now. They don't know how to unite. So they know the majority of them will be afraid of anybody talking, here comes that black identity extremist. They're talking about that black stuff. They're talking about Haru and Aset and temples. We can't deal with that. See? So that's how we got to understand the enemy. The enemy knows our people because they know that neo-slavery is still here. It's still in the minds and the psyche of black folks. And that same tactic that was done on the plantation to create that fear by whipping a brother or sister to death, okay, or by us watching black folks being shot down on TV or murdered and strangled to death on TV, that fear is still an innate part of what made slavery work and what created the white idolatry. So the tactic of black identity extremists, oh, no, that was a tactic that is used that has been going on since the 1700s.
Wow. Brother Kwesi, listen, as always, I want to thank you for being with us, for sharing with us. Boy, 2 hours blew by.
Well, I'm honored.
Oh, brother, I don't even know what time it is. Brother, you had me in another space. Brother, you had my ancestral genetic memory bank opening up here, brother.
Brother Kwesi, listen, tell our listening audience again, give us a little recap on where you're going, some of the upcoming trips, your calendar.
Yes, sir. Okay, well, you know, we just did our lecture around the country in L.A. and Miami and New York and trying to outdo Satanilli of Philadelphia. I'm sorry I missed your show when I was in Philly as well. You know, when you're running around the country, brother, you kind of, you know, you just get really spaced out. These planes really wipe you out sometimes. But we're on our way to Ethiopia at the end of the month. Leaving at 27th, and those of us who aren't Christians, I mean, you need to think about going to Africa and see some of the oldest churches there, like Deborah Damu, that predate the European Western churches by 100 years, and seeing the black divinity on those churches that the Jesuits came through there in the 1500s and tried to erase, like they erased the black divinity of Kemet. So no matter where we see black divinity, they try to erase it. And I show one black Yeshua, okay, there that they did not erase, they didn't get. Okay, who was that black Gnostic Christ that I talked about? And then Lalibela, I mean, magnificent, nothing like it on the planet Earth. Here, brothers carved the churches down into solid rock beds, 40 feet down and carved up into the churches, 11 of them in Lalibela, of these magnificent structures. And then Graham Hancock, in his book Signing the Seal, said, "White Knights Templars came and built those churches." Every time you see something great on the African continent, somebody else had to do it. But again, we do our that's our Ethiopian tour that will go up until January 8th, and then our Kemet tour, that'll be this summer. And in fact, we have two tours, and you can go to our KemetNu.com. That's KemetNu.com, and you can print out the brochure. And again, we have two tours, each 15 days each this summer, that we do annually every year. In fact, the tour have gotten so large, we have to do two tours this summer to Kemet.
Great.
Brother Booker, I want to say it's the African communiversities that you have, the education for liberation, that we have to keep and hold on to, because, you know, even black extremists, even Roland Martin was shut down, or they're shutting him, even him down.
Yeah, it's definite.
Shutting everybody down.
I mean, again, you know, this is it. I mean, but you said it, brother. I mean, we're going to have that black savior come quick.
Wow.
We're under, you know, it's done, you know, because when people don't have a communication, then you can do whatever you want to a people. You know, I mean, a lot of things that we find out around the country, the little bit of news that we did have, okay, came through, TV1.
Exactly.
The general masses could at least watch, you know, and see what's going on and give a black perspective to it anyway. But now we have nothing, zero.
Wow. And that's the whole point.
Right, that's the whole point.
Wow.
Exactly.
Brother Crazy, listen, I want to thank you for being with us, and looking forward to you getting back. We're going to be doing things in conjunction with the program next year. So hopefully we can get you in here, maybe in February or something around the
Black History Month. You know,
exactly.
We don't get black in February. Come on, brother, we turn in chameleon back in February. You got to catch us, black, brother.
We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, my brother. Good talking to both of you, too.
All right.
Take care.
Hotel, peace.
All right. Hotel. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll start to wind things down.
Listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
What is in 1 million brothers and sisters who are tired of the same old rhetoric, the same old leaders, the same old ways of dealing with political and economic empowerment? If you realize that nobody's going to save black people but us, if you understand that no existing political party prioritizes the best interests of African Americans as a collective, if you believe that leadership is as leadership does, and this means that the best leaders for the black collective must come from the ranks of those who place and hold the best interests of black people foremost and uttermost, if you understand that black people must develop the mindset and the will to finance their own racial uplift organizational efforts, then get involved with 1 million conscious black voters and contributors. The movement is now. Go to www.iamoneofthemillion.com. That's www.iamoneofthemillion.com.
Hey, yeah, we're the same brothers from a long time ago. We were talking about television and doing it on the radio. What we did was to help our generation realize they got to get out there and get busy because it wasn't going to be televised. We got respect for young rappers and the way they're freewaying. But if you're going to be teaching folks things, be sure you know what you're saying. Older folks in our neighborhood got plenty of know-how. Remember, if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't be out there now. And I ain't coming at you with no disrespect. All I'm saying is that you damn well got to be correct. Because if you're going to be speaking for a whole generation, and you know enough to try and handle their education, be sure you know the real deal about past situations and ain't just repeating what you heard on a local TV station. Sometimes they tell lies and put them in a truthful disguise. But the truth is, that's why we said it wouldn't be televised. They don't know what to say to our young folks, but they know that you do. And if they really knew the truth, why would they tell you? The first sign is peace. Tell all them gun-toting young brothers that the man is glad to see us out there killing one another. We raised too much hell when they were shooting us down, so they started poisoning our minds and trying to jerk us all around. And then they tell us we got to come in and control our situation. They want half of us on dope and the other half in incarceration. If the ones they want dead ain't killed by what they instigated, they can put some dope on the brother's body and claim it was drug-related. Tell them drug-related means there don't need to be no investigation, or at least that's the way they're going to play it on the local TV station. All your 9mm brothers, give them something to think about. Tell them you heard that this is the new word. They got to work that stuff out. Because somehow they're feeling the wrong way with a gun in their hands. They're feeling real independent, but they're just pulling contracts with a man. 5 and 5 will tell you it's hopeless out there on the avenue, but if they really knew the truth, why would they tell you? And if they look at you like you're insane and they start calling you scarecrow and say you ain't got no brain, or start telling folks that you've suddenly gone lame, or that white folks have finally co-opted your game, or worse yet, implying that you don't really know, that's the same thing they said about us a long time ago. Young rappers, one more suggestion before I get out of your way. But I appreciate the respect you give me and what you got to say. I'm saying protect your community and spread that respect around. Tell brothers and sisters they got to calm that bullshit down. Because we're terrorizing our old folks and we brought fear into our homes. And they ain't got to hang out with the senior citizens. Just tell them, damn it, leave the old folks alone. And we know who's ripping off the neighborhood. Tell them that BS ain't got to stop them. Tell them you're sorry they can't handle it out there, but they got to take the crime off the block. And they look at you like they think you're insane, or start calling you scarecrow thinking you ain't got no brain, or start telling folks that you suddenly gone lame, or that white folks have suddenly co-opted your game, or worse yet, saying that you really don't know. That's the same thing they said about me a long time ago. And if they tell folks that you finally lost your nerve, that's the same thing they said about us when we said Johannesburg. But I think you young folks need to know that things don't go both ways. You can't talk respect on every other song or just every other day. What I'm speaking on now is the raps about the women folks. On one song, she's your African queen, and on the next one, she's a joke. And you ain't said no words that I haven't heard, but that ain't no compliment. It only insults your 8 people out of 10 and questions your intelligence. 4-letter words or 4-syllable words won't make you a poet. It will only magnify how shallow you are and let everybody know it. And if they look at you like they think you're insane, or they call you scarecrow thinking you ain't got no brain, or start telling folks that you suddenly gone lame, or that the white folks have finally co-opted your game, or you really don't know, they said that about me a long time ago. If they finally start telling people that you lost your nerve, that's what they said about Johannesburg. You ain't insane. You have got a brain. You haven't gone lame. You have got your game. Remember, keep the nerve. Keep the nerve. Keep the nerve. Keep the nerve. We're talking about peace.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. Again, I want to thank Reverend Ashra Kwesi for spending some time with us this evening. It's always an interesting discussion when he comes on, Brother Richard.
Yes, sir. It's really, you know, I have no words, but it definitely helps us be able to see what, when we talk about science and our ancient African roots, that we really connected everything together. And I think that that lesson of then is applicable to now. If we actually recognize that everything is connected as it relates to us, then we will be not only providing that science of knowing what to do, but as you and Brother Ashley were speaking on, manifesting that spirit of the ages, giving us the empowerment to do what is necessary to do. And I think that's really why African people were able to build architectural monuments that we say obviously were built for eternity, but definitely built for us to see now when we think that we can't do anything at all.
Yeah, that looking at yourself as less than, it really does a job psychologically on our people, and especially on our children coming up, because if they can be exposed to these type of things early on, then it kind of grows in them like a sore. It'll fester, if you know what I mean, Brother Richard. These things, and it's important to a white society based in white supremacy to keep these negative images going. Keep them always distracted by something. Keep them looking at themselves as less than. Keep negative images about your people and about yourself always being shown. And to cut off any type of information, you know, we talked about this on the program a couple of weeks ago when they pulled the plug on that TV1 news with Roland Martin. And it's not to the fact that Roland Martin, it's to the fact that a news program is being pulled. And it's nothing else, no other news on the television that's directed towards black issues or even talking about it from a black perspective. Mm-hmm. So, you know, our people got to put on their thinking caps when you're talking about Europeans, European society. They're thinking all the time to the detriment of our people, but we're not looking at this from a war strategy. And the only time the doors is open, so to speak, or things are almost on a level playing field, and I don't want to even use that term, is on holiday times. He did that during enslaving of our people. He still do it now. He don't mind you enjoying yourself during this period. But after these 6-7 days or whatever is over, then it's back to business as usual. And, you know, something that's always been strange to me, Richard, that you see a lot of these edicts or symbols of this holiday come out of German society, whether it's mistletoe, trees, St. Nicholas, all this stuff come out of German idolatry. But you've noticed that a lot of Europeans kind of look down on or look at Germans with a jaundiced eye. But a lot of this stuff come right out of their mindset, traditions that they had and that they brought here.
And Germans, those Hessian soldiers were the ones that helped those Americans fight the British. I mean, those Hessians and taking it to Rome, those German tribes were the ones that kept the Roman soldiers. They couldn't go up in there, you know. So they had to. Rome was the power, but those Germanic tribes were able to hold them off. So as a quote unquote warrior class, caste, type of people. For Pennsylvania, it was like one stone throw that Pennsylvania would have been totally a German society.
Yeah, well, you know, and I wanted to share this, this is a time to do it. I pulled this letter down. It's a young lady that put, it was in The Guardian, and that's a newspaper from England. She's a college student, a black girl. She lived in the Netherlands. You know, our people are scattered all over. I want to share with you this letter that she wrote. You know, they got traditions all throughout Europe in relation to this holiday that are clearly disparaging the black people, but it's related to the holiday. I don't know whether you ever ran across this thing called Black Pete.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
Yeah, well, and that's where white men put all this blackface, put on wigs, and run around. I guess they're supposed to be elves or something in relation to Santa Claus or St. Nicholas. But let me read to you her account of when she was in grade school. She's a young lady now, but let me just share with you a couple of paragraphs of what she stated here. The heading caption is, "I grew up with a negative Dutch stereotype of black people. Amsterdam is right to phase out the blacked up Christmas characters." She said, as children gathered, I remember feeling an anticipation in the school hall. It was December and I had recently started primary school. All of a sudden, there was a loud banging at the door. I remember looking around and seeing the terror on the other children's faces when the doors flew open and several grown men stormed into the hall with their faces completely blacked up. The terror soon made way for joy when the men started throwing around candy. I was left in total confusion. These grown men with faces blacked up, Afro wigs, and big red lips were talking to me in broken Dutch and trying to make me smile while prancing around like a clown. I remember wondering why they were looking like my father, and they were acting so silly. My father was a smart man and grown up. These grown men in blackface were acting like misbehaving children. It became more confusing when St. Nicholas himself entered. A tall, old white man, dressed like the Pope, was treated with the utmost respect by my teachers, who had been laughing at the blacked-up men that they were referred to as Black Petes. As soon as St. Nicholas entered, the Black Petes calmed down and silently followed his orders. I couldn't understand the strange power that St. Nicholas had over these grown men who had moments before seemed uncontrollable. At that moment, I remembered a creeping feeling that something about this was wrong. I knew that Black Pete's behavior was wrong. I knew that the way St. Nicholas was treating Black Pete was wrong. But I didn't understand why. I looked around and saw the smiles on the other children's faces and on the teachers, and I thought the only explanation must be that I was the one that was wrong. From that moment onward, I never thought to question Black Pete again. The acceptance and enjoyment of the tradition became a measure of how Dutch I was. And since Dutch culture was the only culture I knew, I was petrified to be excluded from it. Last week, Amsterdam's mayor made a statement that finally validated my creeping feeling by proposing a change of the image of Black Pete. The proposed makeover follows a court ruling that the depiction of Black Pete is in fact racist. The court determined that the character was a negative stereotype of black people. Soon afterwards, the Council of Amsterdam filed an appeal against the verdict, arguing that the stereotype of Black Pete wasn't negative. I grew up in a middle-class environment in The Hague, and I couldn't count all the people of color on one hand. Racism was never that overt. Perhaps there weren't that many of us, so we were not considered a threat. I am negative. If any negative stereotyping occurred in my presence, it was always quickly followed by, "But you're different." As a child, I never was sure what that meant, or if I should speak out against negative stereotypes of Black people being lazy, dirty, dumb, because I was still afraid of being excluded. My silence came hand in hand with the pang of guilt for not sticking up for my own. Then these were the seemingly positive stereotypes about Black people being better at singing, dancing, or sports, an example of being the Black player on our national football team. I remembered feeling proud when such remarks were made by white folks, because it meant that we had worth. What I did not understand was that a positive or romanticized stereotype strips a person of their humanity by denying them individually in the same way that the negative stereotype does, as noted by the policy of Azania Tavares. All the Black Petes are the same, have the same name, the same face, and the same character. They're all interchangeable. So, Richard, you know, this young lady writes straight from the heart in reference to what she saw and how she felt that she was supposed to accept this.
Mm-hmm.
She said the acceptance and the enjoyment of this tradition became a measure of how Dutch I was. And since Dutch culture was the only culture I knew, I was petrified to be excluded from it. Now, she was talking about the acceptance of it showed how Dutch she was. She wasn't Dutch at all. She just happened to live there and be exposed to that culture. Well, her opinion of it is the same way Black people feel about these European holidays here in the States. Mm-hmm. It's no different. It's no different. But once she educated herself, mm-hmm. she seen where this type of stuff, white folks didn't see nothing wrong with it. They thought it was fun. But she expressed how detrimental this was to her, even as a young girl. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to share that portion of, I mean, she continues to talk about the, you know, this situation, but I just wanted to share a portion of that letter with you. Or with the listening audience, to let them know it's time for our people to start thinking critically about what we're dealing with. You know, we don't have to wait for this man's holidays to give our children. Our people are not ignorant or stupid. Some of our people act like that's the only time we can give our children, our wives, our children, our loved ones, friends, gifts, is when he dictates to us on December 25th. He didn't invent giving gifts or things like that to your loved ones, showing them how much you care. We can do that at any time. We should do that at any time. We don't have to wait and go broke at the end of the year for some old foolish pagan holiday that this man has set up with froth with all types of old pagan idolatry. This stuff has nothing to do with us. And it shouldn't be offensive to anybody that this is being talked about. It should be offensive to any of us that don't talk about it and that keep perpetuating this type of stuff and passing it down to our children. We need to do better than that for our children.
Mm, for our legacy.
Yeah, so listen, we're winding things down. I just want to let everybody know that tomorrow at 10, from 10 to 12, tune in to SST. Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore, I think tomorrow afternoon from 4 to 6. I have to double check. I have slotted on the calendar African, not African Perspectives, I'm sorry, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers is supposed to air from 4 to 6 p.m. on Sunday morning. Back with Revive from 11 to 1, which is the POC, Sunday evening, Time for Awakening at 7 p.m. Be interesting conversation on Sunday evening, Brother Richard. I'm a billboard, I guess. It'd be interesting discussion. I hope everybody listens in. On Monday, things start out again with African Perspectives. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, African Perspectives with Brother Oshi from 11 to 1. And Wednesday, Sister POC with Revive comes back from 8 to 10. On Thursdays, Us Lifting Us, Black economic program that comes on from 9 to 11. And then on Fridays, we're back with Time for Awakening from 8 to 10. New program starting in January, Brother Richard. Sister Nataki's program, Let's Buy Black 365.com, is slated to start that first week in January.
Oh, great.
So, and then some other big happenings are happening soon, and I'll be excited to reveal those things to the Time for Awakening audience. We're trying to work out some details on some new things that are coming down the pipe. So, stay tuned. It's, Time for Awakening is expanding, and I'm happy about this because, I'm gonna do all we can to counter negative stereotypes, negative information in reference to our people. It's all about giving our people tools for our redemption. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Sunday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.